That was Gerald Clayton on the jazz introduction to the latest Wolves Wired podcast. Tim, tell us about Gerald Clayton. I hate to put you on the spot, but I don't know anything about jazz, and I'm a poser with having a jazz intro on the podcast.
That's fine. Compared to my dad, who I'm introduced to jazz most of the time, I'm also kind of a poser.
Well, it's a good thing it's not a jazz podcast, Tim. We're here to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, contributing to the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network. You can follow the HP Basketball Network on Twitter, HPB Network. Timmy, preseason game, Wolves Thunder. The Thunder won by a lot of points. It wasn't televised, so you're going to have to be pretty descriptive. But what was the underlying theme of this game, other than one team played defense?
Yeah, well, that's part of it. Last year, when Kevin Garnett was on the floor, the team played much better defense than when he was off the floor. Small sample size, but tonight...
Did he play tonight?
He did. He started. He would play the beginning of the first and the third quarter, and then you wouldn't see him again for the rest of the half.
So half of his shifts,
right,
essentially.
Exactly. And it was a lot of the same. When he was on the floor, their defense was decent, or at least it looked in sync when he was sort of the quarterback defensively in the paint. When he left, madness ensued for a while. Usually they get it together to a certain degree because they'd go on little stretches where they looked okay, but for the most part defensively, they still look pretty lost. There's a lot of work to be done.
Well, the final score was like 122 to
99.
There you go. So Russell Westbrook, basketball crack, 14 points, 13 assists, and 6 rebounds.
Eight rebounds. He was 2 boards away from a triple-double with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter?
Yeah, but how many minutes did he play? Like
22.
Yeah, not a lot.
No.
Who started at shooting guard, Tim? It's a question everybody wants to know. Yesterday...
Was it Kevin Martin?
I don't know. You were there. I wasn't there. I think that's the funny part about this whole thing. Let's rewind back to yesterday when Sam Mitchell apparently told the Sirius FM radio station that Zach LaVine is now the starting shooting guard and it's his job to lose. This is after Kevin Martin was asked his opinion about coming off the bench and scoffed at it, really. He said, "I know where I stand among shooting guards in the league." And
what's most important to me is that we don't look past an opportunity to add somebody of very special value or qualities.
Really laughed at the idea. We played the audio. I assume people listening to this one listened to the last one, hopefully.
So
who started? I don't even know.
Zach LaVine started.
And how did he do?
He was all right. I mean, there was a lot of what you saw of Zach LaVine last year. You saw a lot of that today. He didn't have the luxury of having Ricky Rubio as point guard, which I think, at least in theory, is a big part of why they're starting him. If you want to get him used to catching and shooting, you want a ball-dominant point guard that passes the ball well. Tyus Jones, who did start at point tonight.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize.
He did. He started over Andre Miller. Is hopefully one day going to be a good enough point guard to get LaVine the ball and make it look good, but right now he's not there.
So what is your stance on the Kevin Martin coming off the bench move? Or the move in general? I suppose either one could be good for either player. You could make that argument. And you can make the argument that Kevin Martin coming off the bench is good for the bench. I think both of those are arguments you can make.
On one hand, the 1 year Kevin Martin came off the bench in his career was with Oklahoma City.
Who they played tonight.
There, and he was excellent.
Interesting how that... full circle.
Yeah. And the idea of him coming off the bench for the Wolves, looking at his 1 year off the bench for the Thunder, you'd think that
he's going to score anyway.
He's doing it well. In addition, as I said, LaVine partnered up with Rubio. You'd think that might work as well. LaVine's known for being a pretty good catch-and-shoot guy. You don't necessarily want him controlling the ball. That's when he tends to make bad decisions. But my issue comes more with who else is on the bench for the Wolves right now. I don't like Martin partnered up. Not that they're going to be spending all their time together. It's not 5 minutes.
Are you going to say Andre Miller?
I'm not. I'm going to say Shabazz Muhammad.
Wow.
Shabazz and Martin paired together, I don't like the fit. They both like having the ball. They both like shooting in excess a lot of the time. Neither are good passers.
Subpar defenders.
They're both poor defenders.
Same with Andre Miller.
Yeah. Even
that's why I thought you were going to go there with
that whole bench isn't very good defensively. Not that Levine is a great defender in his own right. But I like the idea of having Levine, who at least is more of a willing passer than Martin, come off the bench with a guy like Shabazz, who he's not a willing passer.
Yeah, if you want, if you're going into the rest of the bench lineup, sadly, as sad as it sounds or as weird as it sounds, between Gorgie, Kevin Martin, and Shabazz Muhammad, whoever's playing the four, which you have to imagine is Bielitsa. Hopefully it isn't Adrian Payne, who did come off the bench first.
Correct.
Of those three backup power forwards. But are there enough shots to go around? It seems weird to say, but Gorgie likes to score. He likes to get his numbers. He, along with Karl Anthony Towns, had 18 points, and they led the team in scoring. But then you have Kevin Martin, who needs his shots. And you have Shabazz Muhammad, who, if he's not scoring, what is he really doing? And even with Andre Miller, who doesn't even need to score.
He's going to take a couple shots.
Seems like you need an extra ball out there. There's not enough baskets to go around.
Right. With Jang, I feel like Jang is going to get his shots more naturally than the other guys. If you feed him the ball in the post, he'll shoot. He's not going to, find the ball in the perimeter and drive. This is an afro-basket.
But if you give him the ball, he might not give it back.
Sure, but he's a more willing passer than, say, Martin or definitely Shabazz, and he's not going to
get the ball
magically find the ball. If he gets the ball, it's usually in good position.
Sure.
Otherwise, he'll pass the ball back out. If he gets out on the perimeter, he's going to pass the ball.
Well, the stat nerds would argue he takes a lot of mid-range shots, and we all know about how everybody feels about mid-range shots, but the greater discussion I think we're having is the Levine-Kevin Martin swap. I think it parallels to what the Clippers have going on with the Wesley Johnson and the Lance Stephenson. I mean, which one is going to give you more offensively?
Neither.
I think Lance Stephenson has more tools offensively than Wes Johnson does. But Wes Johnson could go out there and not mind just starting. He doesn't need the ball. He just needs to stand there and space the floor.
We're going on a little Clippers tangent, but
well, it parallels.
I'm not a big Stephenson fan because I think he thinks more of his abilities than his teammates and the coaching staff. I think he thinks more of his abilities than he actually has.
Are you saying
he's
a ball hog, Tim?
I'm saying he thinks more of his abilities than he actually possesses. He's willing to pass the ball sometimes. He racks up assists a lot of the time, but he loves having the ball, and it hurts teams a lot of the time.
I guess I like the idea of Levine fitting in with a lineup and not so much taking it upon himself to do things. With the bench.
I like the idea of him fitting in with a system that revolves around Rubio getting people shots and Wiggins isolating on the side and Towns posting up. But mainly when Levine's shooting, it's off of other players setting him up.
You said Wiggins, so let's just... I didn't get to see the game. I wasn't at the game. I did catch a very sketchy illegal stream that was...
well done.
Actually what was being shown on the Wolves Jumbotron. So when players shot free throws, opposing players shot free throws, and the Wolves, electronic crew or whatever would put the howl-o-meter on the Jumbotron, it showed the howl-o-meter on this illegal stream.
That's fantastic.
And they somehow incorporated Alan Horton's broadcast with it, which was sort of weird, but these guys did an awesome job at making sure that I could view the game illegally, and I appreciate that. But Wiggins, how did he look? The ball handling, the three-point shooting, that's what everybody is going to keep an eye on.
He looked okay. I mean, he deferred to Towns and to...
As he's known to do.
Yeah, he wasn't totally aggressive, and I'm not worried about that right now. It's the preseason. I don't think he played a ton minutes-wise. He shot 2 of 7.
We're a lot less worried about the passiveness than we were with him when he came out of the draft.
We know he's going to try to score. I'm not terribly worried about that. He had one nice play where he took Durant off the dribble and scored. That got fans and writers buzzing a little bit. But overall, I mean, it was kind of
a pedestrian
game. Yeah, it wasn't. I don't think anyone was blown away by him, but it's... I don't want to use it's the preseason card, but I'm going to.
You're allowed to do that.
It's the preseason.
Well, it's the same card we used for Eurobasket when we... Right. Gushed over Nemanja Bjelica, who, in an interesting conversation with Damian Rudesh, I learned how to pronounce both of those guys' names, and we'll play that audio.
I'll tell you how you're going to spell it. M E H is an A, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Ma, M-A-H. Ma.
So Nehma?
Nehma. Nya would be N-Y-A.
Like na-na-na-na-na. Nya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nya.
Yeah.
Because my name is Damian. And people say Damjan. And his is Nemanja, and people say Nemanja. So J is...
J is H.
Is, yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you pronounce the full name then? Yours.
Whose?
Yours.
Mine? Yeah. Damian.
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 Rudesh.
Damian.
Rudesh.
Rudesh. Yeah. Rudesh. Z with a V on top is J.
J.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Right. Damian.
Yeah. Damo is a nickname.
Damo?
Yeah, Bielitz has been the star, I think, through the scrimmage, which we can get into a little bit, but the preseason game tonight, from what I saw on the illegal feed, which was only a handful of possessions, he looked pretty good. He's unselfish right now, I think. He makes a lot of good plays, but he's unselfish, and sometimes that can be to a fault, but Sam Mitchell is stressed in the practices, and I don't know if he said it after either the scrimmage or the game. I didn't stick around after the scrimmage, but he likes his offenses to move the ball. Everybody's passing. Everybody's moving. And Bielitza fits that nicely, I think. But I saw a couple things out of him tonight where he made a play toward the basket and passed when he could have scored. But from what I've seen, he's been awesome. He's been everything that we'd expected. And I think that Eurobasket performance might not have been a fluke.
Yeah, I was big on Bielitza before.
Of course, we went all in.
Yeah, we're both in on Bielitza, I think. And I said this on Twitter during the game, our whole row, just we were all looking back and forth at each other talking about him. I think everyone in press row is on board with him at this point. Mitchell has talked about his unwillingness to shoot sometimes when mm-hmm. he goes to the hoop.
I call it Zach LaVine syndrome because Zach LaVine had it last year.
Yeah, he had a couple plays like that. There was one in particular, he went to the hoop and he had a shot and he passed it out to, I think it was Rudesh. And he wasn't terribly open. The ball got swung around again.
But he could have scored or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He could have scored on that play. For the most part, I think he made the right decisions, though. He is pretty good about figuring out when he has a lane and can score. And there were a couple plays where he had some nice plays to the hoop. He's got a good like spin with the ball when he goes up for layups. He had a couple weird.
You can tell he watched Allen Iverson. Yeah. He's his favorite player. Yeah. He's got that touch around the basket, but quit being nice because he called me out on the internet today when he took advantage of a mismatch and backed, I think it was whatever the Payne guy was on the other team, not Adrian Payne.
Cameron
Payne.
The rookie.
Yeah, we're not going to discuss Adrian Payne on this podcast because he shouldn't need to be a topic. But he backed down Cameron Payne in the post, and you were like, hey, Bielitza post up.
Okay.
And he missed the bucket, which is rippable, but not in this case because
no.
He was fouled, and it was an uncalled foul.
It was. I'm not saying anything.
What are you saying?
I was just saying we've discussed the fact that he never posts up, and I thought it was funny. He posted up in his first preseason game. That's all I'm saying.
Was it a true post up, or did he take advantage of a mismatch?
All I saw was a post up.
He got it on the perimeter. He saw that the defender was smaller than him, and he turned his body and backed down and kicked it. Or he tried to shoot, but he got fouled. But he didn't intend to post up. I'm just saying.
He intended to post up when he saw the
mismatch. Yeah, when he saw the mismatch. There you go. There's the chicken or the egg.
Okay, so am I supposed to wait for
No.
A big man?
I just wanted
to see him post up a big man for me to tweet at you.
I asked you about Bielitza. I wanted you to call me out right away, and you were soft. You beat around it. I had to bring it up.
I'll be sure to bring it up next time.
Yeah, call me out. We want to hold each other accountable.
Noted.
I'll bring another thing up I just thought of later, but... Yeah, Bielitz has been awesome. I think it's awesome that we're really excited about him not being terrible. And
that's nice.
You know, I think we're really excited about a player who is serviceable. And that's fine.
Especially at power forward where Garnett's going to get 20 minutes a game and won't play the latter end on back-to-backs, I'm assuming.
Sure.
Adrian Payne, I'll bring his name up briefly.
God, I wish you would.
He... you don't want him to play very much.
He was
right
he was the first person to replace Garnett tonight. But what I did like in the second half was that he was the last one to come out in the second half. He didn't come out until the fourth quarter. It was Bielitsa. You saw a little more of Rudesh.
Right. You need a guy that is going to play power forward and play relatively well. He has Bielitsa.
Yeah, he's great.
Has defensive issues.
You think so?
Less so than a lot of this team. I mean, he plays hard. He knows how to play defense.
He had a night.
It's just athletic limitation. It's not a big deal. He'll be fine on defense.
I thought he had
offensively, he's very smart. I'm sorry.
He does things that analytic guys like, which is a huge plus in Wolves fandomville, in the Wolves fandom bubble. Am I wrong? You laugh. Not loud enough for the mic to hear it, but you're laughing.
Yeah, no.
He does things that are analytic friendly, which is always a plus because you don't have to fight that battle. And then, you know, I thought he had a nice defensive play on DJ Augustine when he got caught in a switch. He did.
What I like about him defensively is he's not afraid to get hit.
He's not afraid to guard anybody.
No, he has no problems with contact. Athletically, he's not a leaper, but that's not really a problem. We got guys on this team that are leapers that aren't good defenders, so that's not the be-all, end-all of being a good defensive player.
You see, and I hate to bring him up because he always seems to come up when you talk about European prospects or Bielitsa even specifically, but last year I thought one of the biggest things Nikola Mirotic or Mirotic struggled with was when to shoot and when to put the ball on the court. And I think if you ask Sean Eichen or any of the Bulls guys too, they would tell you the same thing. And I think Bielitsa might run into that problem. Maybe the flow and pace of an NBA game, because Bielitsa and Karl Anthony Towns have both talked about it. When you come into the NBA, there's a change of pace and style, and I just threw my pen on the table.
That was nice.
Yeah, it was accidental, but it landed. You hear so often about the change of pace and style of NBA, so maybe there is an element to that with Bielitsa and figuring out when to shoot, when to drive, and when to kick. We saw with Alexis Fed his tendency to just jump and get rid of the ball, but he would jump and have no idea what he was going to do at the time. Bielitsa is prone to that. I've seen it.
I know Mirotić and Bielitsa are the common, Mirotić is the first guy people compare Bielitsa to.
And they're similar to those credit.
I think the
comparisons are lazy.
I think the big difference between the two of them is, like, Mirotić shot 4 threes a game in like 20 minutes a game last year. And I don't, if Bielitsa's...
Well, he was like third in the rookie of the year voting, wasn't he?
He was important to their team. But he also made a lot of bad decisions. When you talk about shooting versus giving up the ball, Bielitsa's problem is passing too much. Mirotić's problem was shooting too much when he should have passed the ball. I feel like the Bielitsa's problem is more fixable and a better problem to have.
Yeah.
Taking bad shots.
And maybe not even a problem, just a matter of getting used to it.
Yeah.
It's really hard to sit here and tell you with a straight face that I think he's a mature player, but by all accounts, he's a mature human. For somebody our age, coming to a different country and realizing his situation, he was excited in media day like a little kid almost,
yep,
which you and I would be, but he also is married with a child. And
Which we are not.
And from a piece at Canis Hoopus from Demir, I would totally butcher his last name, so I'm not going to say it.
I hear you.
He seems to be a very understanding and grown adult, and all the talk about him, Professor Big Shots is his nickname. So if you want to read more about Bielitsa, Andy over at Punch Drunk Wolves wrote something excellent about him at the scrimmage with some nuances as far as X's and O's goes. I thought it was pretty good. So again, punchdrunkwolves.com. If you are listening, you probably know what that is, but if you haven't read it, go check that out. What about Rudesh? I thought he was...
I liked him. I mean,
he's more than just a guy who stands around and shoots threes on the offensive end anyway.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, he put the ball on the floor a surprising number of times.
He's seasoned. He seems to be...
I liked him. He knows his role. He shoots well, obviously. I mean, he showed that tonight. He's not afraid to shoot.
I'm
a fan of his. I mean, he played well with Bielitsa specifically. I liked him a lot.
He made a lot more shots, I think, tonight and in the scrimmage, individually, if not definitely put together, more than he did in the entire Eurobasket tournament. So it just goes to show you. When we doubted him, I mean, I never doubted him, wink, wink. But, I mean, if you wanted to, I mean, it was the only time I had ever seen him play, and he didn't really play that much for Croatia. And so it was really, he came in with low expectations, and I was sort of taken aback by his performance. I thought it was pretty good. And then I saw him play defense, which was not great.
But as we discussed, I think in the last podcast, we can't use
Eurobasket
as much as we can use his season last year with the Pacers. I think you mentioned...
Which I saw less of.
Obviously, but he even said during the second half of the season, I think after New Year's, he shot over something like 45-50% from three. And this was in the NBA.
Sure.
Which is important. Yeah. And it was on a decent Pacers team, Eastern Conference.
A decent Eastern Conference.
Yeah. So he played a, I don't want to say a vital role, but he played a role and did it well on a decent team.
From what I was listening to Alan Horton say on the radio cast tonight, apparently, allegedly, Indiana just pretty much asked him to space the floor. He didn't get to do a lot of stuff. And I thought he's been involved in a lot more action as far as staggered screens with Bielitsa specifically go. So he's doing a little more things offensively than I expected him to, just from his reputation and what I've read about him and his numbers indicate. I thought Alan Horton did an excellent job to describe his rebound percentage, microscopic. But I mean, he's proving to be a serviceable player. And I think between those two and Garnett, maybe if you can play Prince at the small four, which we'll get into later, I don't think Adrian Payne needs to play.
Let's just end the Adrian Payne conversation there for now.
There was a lot of hubbub. The Wolves lost the scrimmage 122-99, like you said, or the preseason game, rather, yep. Not the scrimmage. I don't remember the score from the scrimmage. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Before either of those things, the big topic on the internet, I guess you could say, the A topic on the Twitterverse was the rebrand account that popped up. And I know John Krasinski threw it out there, and some other national media pundits were getting into having opinions on it. Did you see it? I don't know if you saw it. There was four or five different designs. I have the Twitter account pulled up. The account is T-Wolves Rebrand. They have, I mean, whoever is behind this, if you're listening, we commend you for the effort and the creativity behind it. There's a little more variables that go into account, obviously, and this is a very difficult thing to try to put into motion, I imagine, and it's hard to tell what the organization thinks or how seriously it takes it. I think they're a cool idea. I think Billy Bowl last year at WolfAmongWolves.com tried to rebrand the Wolves too, so this is not a new idea by any means. I don't know, over the last 10 years, Tim, how many rebrands they've gone through. Do you, or can you?
Well, when they got Garnett, the first time when they drafted him, they had their original jerseys for a year, and then they switched to those, you know, the trees sort of along
the one
the
everybody
side.
Loves.
The ones that they
and
had.
Want, between, and want back, I think.
Yep, they had them between 96 and, what would it be, like 07 or something. And then they switched to, it's similar to the jerseys they have now, except they have the trees on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then after, I think, a year or two of that, they have the jerseys we have now.
We have gone through a lot, the Wolves, rather, have gone through a lot of rebuilding slogans or catchphrases.
They've had to. They've rebuilt their roster so many times.
Off the top of your head, I got United We Run, What's Now, Grow Together. You think of any other ones?
True Blue?
I don't know, Tim's roommate. Tim's roommate on the pod, ladies and gentlemen. He's over there on the couch.
At Fat Vin Baker.
Fat Vin Baker. On the Twitter. I lost track of what we were talking about. Oh, great. The slogans. I think the rebrand idea is not new. I don't think the Wolves are going to implement these ideas right away. The one thing I did want to bring up is a lot of people seem to have rebrand ideas for a team whose fans have rightfully not paid very close attention to, and you can tell by the attendance numbers. Let's get some attendance totals, I think, first before we get into the rebrand. Now that there's the team and the Mayo Clinic and all that, I'm not too concerned about what they look like when they're playing. Are you? No. I'm just very bitter. I'm an old man. It's not that I think these ideas are cool, and you know, they could wear them and it wouldn't bother me, but it's just, I don't have a torch and pitchfork. You know, I'm not calling for the change.
I'm not desperate for a rebrand, mostly because I just don't care what the jerseys or the logo look like.
And there's no advertisements on these. And
frankly, I think at least as far as the home jersey is concerned, I like the home uniforms as they are. If they rebrand the jerseys, I mean, go for it. It's not going to change anything for me. The logo, if you want to change that, go for it. I don't have any strong opinions one way or the other. I'll understand it if they do it, because the last time they changed their uniforms, Kevin Love was on the roster. Ricky Rubio, I don't think, was on the roster yet. The first major change was when Al Jefferson joined the team. So if they want to do it again, I'll get it. Or I get it, and I understand. If they don't, it doesn't make a difference.
You're not going to be like, hey, why aren't you?
I have no strong opinions on a rebrand.
I have a couple, I guess. One is stronger than the other.
All right.
And neither are probably going to happen. If you rebrand it, just go back to the original logo. Maybe modernize it a little bit. But the same concept.
So we're talking 1989.
The OG Wolf with the side face profile.
I like that one.
Everybody knows about. When KG was a rookie, I believe they still had him.
His rookie year, they had those uniforms in that logo.
So maybe you make it modern a little bit, use modern technology. But I think you go back to that.
With minor touch-ups.
And you make the alternates the one with the pine tree trim that you had during KG's prime. You just go, I mean, you rock KG back. Foot Saunders run, you know, get well soon. Glenn Taylor, same owner. You bring everybody back. You might as well bring the team back to just go all the way.
How long is KG going to be with the team? Well, I guess if he's stepping into an ownership role at some point.
I don't know. Stronger opinion. Okay. And then we'll move
on. Well,
That was the not so strong opinion. I'm only offering that idea because what I would really want is to get the Minneapolis Lakers set back and we can roll with that. But that'll never happen.
So. It won't. I would much prefer this team be called the Lakers.
Oh, so cool.
Don't understand. And this is every...
California's in a drought.
This is every Timberwolves, Minnesota sports fans thing with the Lakers is it makes no sense.
It does.
To have a team in Los Angeles be called the Lakers. It's stupid. But they've won how many championships as the Los Angeles Lakers? It's not changing.
Yeah, I don't know. But some of those championships that the Los Angeles Lakers now claim were Minneapolis.
One in Minneapolis. Changes. Yep.
But, it was the rebrand was a discussion. We just discussed it. We can move on. There are a lot of changes going on within the Wolves, though. I think you saw it both at the scrimmage and at the preseason game. If you go back a couple months ago when they had the free scrimmage, when there was a line throughout the skyways to get in, do you remember that?
I do.
Not so much with the most recent free scrimmage.
Less than I expected. It was free. Garnett was playing in this one.
Rubio.
I was trying to remember whether Rubio played or not, but everyone but Rubio, I think, played in this one.
And you had Bielitsa in the most recent one.
Right.
Not that's going to draw an exclusive crowd.
It was the whole roster, whereas the first one had Towns, Levine, I think Wiggins might have played in it, Tyus Jones, and then the Summer League roster. Lorenzo Brown might have played in it too.
And both events were less to get excited about, I guess, than Dunks After Dark was in Mankato last year.
That was fun.
And you could say that it is because the Wolves introduced a new digital ticket system. It's called Flash Seats. An article on Carol11.com that I'm reading directly from says fans will have three ways to enter the game: by downloading the Flash Seats app on a smartphone, by credit card, or with a Minnesota driver's license. So no longer can you get into a game with a ticket. Like with a ticket. If you buy tickets at the box office that day, those are your three options. And I know I'm sort of piggybacking off of Dan Barrero's segment that he had a few weeks ago that he ranted and raved about the season tickets, in which, from my understanding, when you buy season tickets, you get your season tickets online, but if you want to sell them, you don't get the physical tickets anymore. So you can't just sell them or just give them to somebody. And if you do sell them, you have to sell them through this system that the Wolves have, and the Wolves take 20%. Conceptually, I understand why the organization would do it. They're trying to maximize profits.
Yep.
From a business perspective, that always makes sense. But come on. I mean, if I'm going to buy season tickets for every home game, and as a 25-year-old, trying to find a place in life and a career, I might have a shift during a game that night and whatnot.
Right.
Maybe I call Tim up and say, hey, Tim, I know you're a Wolves fan. You want to go to the game? I bought season tickets at cost that the organization was asking, but I can't make tonight's game, so I'll just dump off my tickets on my way by, and you can go to the game. But now you can't do that
anymore. Well, okay. I'm not sure.
I mean, I could transfer them. I could probably transfer them to you for free.
Via email.
But that's inconvenient. I mean, what if that's not always convenient, is it? Or what if I can't get to a computer? What if I'm bartending?
And you've got to make a phone call to Will Call?
Yeah.
Is that still an option? Can you call Will Call and say so-and-so is picking up?
Maybe. I entered this conversation with not a lot of background because I don't have to go through the ticket buying process. So anybody who has to deal with this, wolveswired@gmail.com. We would love to hear your experience with it. I did get a few tweets that said it was a hassle. Maybe some people don't have smartphones, you know? It's just,
yep.
I mean, maybe until now, this is the first time we're discussing this. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I have heard next to nothing about it. My dad, or I should say my parents, have season tickets. They gave up their preseason tickets for tonight, but they didn't have any problems.
How did they do that?
Well, they gave it off to someone that they knew, and it was through email, and they said it went fine.
Went fine. Maybe I don't know exactly what I'm talking about, but...
Well, I certainly don't, so it's hard for me to totally chime in with anything.
But until now, my point was, until now, we're not really hearing or discussing about it. Maybe the word wasn't communicated. Granted, we're not season ticket holders, and I'm sure they're better in touch with it, but...
If I have a beef with it, if there is one at all...
I think there is.
It seems like
one legit one.
What's the was there a problem with the ticket system before?
Yeah, it's you go back to maximizing profits in that.
Yeah, it's the
money. We talked before the show. I buy season tickets, but I can't get to all the games.
Right.
And I want to, I invested in these tickets. I bought them at full price. I didn't go around the, I didn't go on the sketchy market to get a hold of them. As a consumer, I feel like that my hard-earned dollars bought those tickets, and now I own them. And if I don't want to go see the Wolves versus the Cavs, and I want to sell that ticket for probably more than I bought it for, I want to be able to do that. And that's just that's part of being a fan, and that's being a customer. Especially, I imagine year-by-year season ticket holders of this team specifically that have supported the Wolves through some not very good seasons. I don't know. I sort of have an issue with that. And if the Wolves have an issue with somebody making a few extra bucks off their product, they're a multi-million-dollar company. They're fully allowed to do that. But I don't imagine the average season ticket holder is somebody who would do the same thing in a business of their own, or it would be at least a small minority. Moving on. After the scrimmage, Marcus Fuller, Pioneer Press, or TwinCitiesWhatever.com, or the St. Paul news organization that seems to be deteriorating.
I hope not.
With some great employees there, of course. He tweets out the article. It says, Tyus Jones looks sharp, leading team in scrimmage, and something like that. And I have his name here because we name names and we hold people accountable on this podcast. Ted T.L. Schwers. I don't know if that's his last name or what, but S-C-H-W-E-R-Z. Quotes the Fuller tweet promo and says, let me get this exactly straight, would not at all be surprised if he, Tyus Jones, is proven better than Ricky Rubio by the All-Star break. Tim, do you agree or disagree with Ted?
Do I have to answer this?
Yeah. Yes, you
do. No! He's not going to be better. No.
Tyus Jones. I mean, Apple Valley.
He did go to Apple Valley.
State champion. National champion.
He was the national champion.
National tournament.
Final Four, most outstanding player. Great college player, great high school player. He's not going to be better than Ricky Rubio. I hope he becomes a good player. He was a late first-round pick. Okay, in the NBA, that's not the same as like an NFL first-round pick when you're drafted late in the first round. That's like being a fourth-round pick. It's not the same. He wasn't drafted to replace Ricky Rubio. That's the thing that
you can call them homers.
I don't want to call them homers. I don't want to sound snobby, but like the average Minnesota sports fan that don't follow the Wolves that closely, that's their misconception, that they think that Tyus Jones is here to replace Rubio.
Well, Rubio can't shoot.
Can Tyus Jones shoot?
I don't know. Tim, your roommate's laughing. Does he have anything he wants to add? No, he's shaking his head.
He doesn't.
I'm sure he's listening to us bash these Tyus Jones homers, and I'm sure he doesn't want to add his opinion. I'm kidding.
Anyway, my whole piece is Tyus Jones wasn't here to replace Ricky Rubio. He was brought here
to address a need.
Hopefully to play a decent backup point guard. If he turns into a starting point guard one day, great. That's not what he was brought here for. I don't think anyone within the organization expects him to ever replace Ricky Rubio as the starter. That's not what he's here for.
Who's your favorite late first-round pick? It can be anybody.
Late in Timberwolves history? Or
any NBA history. It's your call. I leave the question up to you.
That's a tough question.
I know it. And I'm putting you on the spot.
Define late post-lottery?
Sure. Any memorable guy taken between the 20s and the 30s?
I mean, Tony Parker.
There you go.
Is that a good one? Sure. Tony Parker's a great late first-round
What about Wolves history? Well, the Wolves haven't had a late first-round.
Wayne Ellington?
In a while.
Indy Eby?
No, they get a lottery pick. They're always in the lottery.
The era when they would have had late first-round picks, the whole Joe Smith fiasco happened in the early 2000s. Yeah. They lost all their first-round picks except for 2003 when they drafted Indy Eby. Over Josh Howard, fun fact,
yeah.
Who went right after him.
And the NBA will never take first-round draft picks from a team again. Book it.
Yeah.
They never will, especially a small market team.
That was a harsh punishment.
It only hurts their product. Sam Mitchell as a coach seems to be okay. You told me a story about with the Tyus Jones and – or not Tyus Jones. You told me a story with the LaVine and Kevin Martin fiasco yesterday. Fiasco may be a strong way of putting it. But
potential fiasco.
Somebody addressed Sam Mitchell about the switch. John Krasinski, as we've talked about him on before, he's a great leadoff hitter. He's good at doing this stuff. He said, too, that he wasn't there after the game.
And that was scary. It
an awkward situation.
Well, yeah, when John Krasinski is in that post game, everyone just kind of freezes up. I was sitting next to Steve McPherson, and as Sam Mitchell sat down, he looked at me and he's like, is John not here? With these big eyes. Like, what do we do? And thankfully, Jerry's a goat after some awkward silence asked a question. But anyway, I wasn't actually at this pregame chat with Sam Mitchell. Steve was. He's the one who told me the story, basically. John asked a question in regards to the LaVine starting decision. Mitchell answered it. There was a follow-up question asked again by John. Mitchell said something along the lines of, are you really going to ask me about that? I think he expected these questions, but probably didn't want to answer them. I don't want to speculate on why he answered it the way he did. Maybe he just wants to keep it close to the vest. But I'm assuming he expected some media reaction from it.
That's an interesting.
Maybe he doesn't want to give too much away about it.
Well, that'll be an interesting thing to observe throughout the year, I think, is how Sam Mitchell responds to that. Because you've talked to him before, you know, in one-on-one. It's almost like you ask him a question, and you can tell that he is taking up, you know, you're taking up his time. And right. Sam Mitchell doesn't always seem to, I don't know, I guess I don't want to say he doesn't understand the business of these questions or how specific people in this business report now with Twitter and everything and how much how much desire there is for this news, and people seem to hang on every quote and every decision. Things like playing Paul George at the four. Yeah, everything matters now. I mean, what happened in this Matt Barnes and Derek Fisher story that happened today? I mean, people want to know what Matt Barnes said to Derek Fisher when he went to Derek Fisher's house and approached him about being with his deranged wife. I mean, people want to know. So when you – Sam Mitchell doesn't expect that. He calls the media fickle, and he's – to a degree, he's correct. But you're the head coach of an NBA team, and this is the way it is in 2015. This is the way sports are covered. So is he going to do well at adapting? I don't know. But he's not very he's not very receptive to some of the questions he's asked.
Part of his – I don't want to say this is why he got fired, but I think part of the reason why he lost the Raptors a little bit when he coached the Raptors was his my way or the highway sort of mentality. I don't know if that carries over to how he interacts with the media, a unwillingness to change the way he...
No, but you bring up a greater point. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. That's pretty much my entire point.
We got to make it quick because I'm dying on battery. But do you think that's as when you say lose the Raptors? Do you feel that's less possible because he's been around some of the guys for a year as an assistant? Do you feel there's an element if you're a player to say, well, Sam Mitchell didn't want to be in this position. He might like this position, and even though I might not like what Sam Mitchell does, at the same time, I have to remember that Flip is the coach. Or is Sam Mitchell at liberty of losing the team? I mean, I don't think anybody's bulletproof.
I don't want to speculate on whether or not Sam's going to get fired or not. It happens, but
that's his fault as a coach.
I think that was his fault the first time around. Immediately, I don't think he's got any worries, especially with a guy like Garnett, who he's super close with. Garnett's got the team.
Friends with.
Yeah. They're very tight. I don't see anything happening in the immediate. The 1 year as an assistant might help. At the same time, the roles are so different.
And he's gotten older, and he understands now a little more.
Right. I don't know. It's hard to say for sure that there's that one thing's going to happen with him as head coach, because the difference between being a head coach and assistant coach are so different. Especially with the way Sam treats the head coaching job, because I think he treats it a lot differently.
I want to word that differently because I didn't put it in a very good way. Being stubborn like a drill sergeant as an NBA coach is probably not the most effective way to coach a team full of 20 and 19-year-olds and things like that. The discipline might be good, but at the same time, it's proven faulty in the past, and his maturity as a coach and his tendencies in that sense. I didn't watch him tonight on the sideline. I don't know if you have any observations from what he did on the sideline.
No, I didn't. The only thing I noticed on the sideline is how insane Kevin Garnett is on the bench during huddles and timeouts. A lot of times, like a lot of coaches, the coaches will kind of have their own meeting while the players talk, but the players weren't talking. Kevin Garnett was talking, and he was animated, and his eyes were huge.
A lot of
hand motions and pointing and getting in people's faces.
Kind of like how he did at the opener last year.
Yeah, if he does that the entire year, I mean, I'm not saying any direct result will come from him talking in huddles, but it's got to help.
It's a good influence to have.
For sure.
You were saying there was a few national media pundits in the game tonight, correct?
There have been a few. There was Jackie McMullen.
She's been here all week. She's been covering the WNBA finals, but continue.
Sure. Well, yeah, she was at the scrimmage on Monday. Lee Jenkins of Sports Illustrated has been here for most of the week. He was here Monday for the scrimmage. He was there again on tonight. And then Mark Stein was also there, ESPN.com.
Where I worry with this KG mentorship thing, you saw it a lot in his comeback game last year. At the same time, I've seen him leave a game halfway through it. And I've already, he was conspicuously absent from a practice earlier during the latter end of training camp after the NBA TV had gone home. And it was like the third or fourth day, I want to say, but he was absent. Sam Mitchell said he went home early, but he was at practice. KG knows when you're watching him, and he knows what he's doing when you're watching him. So I would like to see him do that consistently, whether or not, whatever the circumstances are, whether the Wolves are, you know, they've won 8 games next April, or whether they're competing for the playoffs. I want to see him do it consistently. But it's just an interesting little observation. But that's all I got. Any NBA preseason stuff you watch? Rashad Vaughn, Minnesota native, scored 20 for the Bucks.
That's nice. Pretty cool. I'm excited to watch the Bucks in the regular season. I've only watched a little bit of preseason. The opener, Clippers Nuggets, and I watched some Lakers Jazz.
Gobert play? Did he play?
Gobert played. I watched it to watch a certain Lakers backup point guard that I'm currently writing about, but he did not play.
Who is that?
Marcel Huertas.
Got it.
Brazilian backup point guard.
Teaser. You write an article about him?
I am. I haven't finished it yet.
Where should people look for it?
Sportingnews.com.
Tim Fakeless will probably he'll probably plug this article on Twitter. So follow him there. TimFakLis. I think we'll wrap it up here. This has been the Wolves Wired podcast, part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network Podcast Center. For Tim Fakeless, for Tim's roommate, for Zachary Bennett. So long.